It is a review. It's Dan, Neil and Sean. After Liverpool 3, Atletico Madrid 2. They've only gone and done it again. And Neil, there's lots around all of these lineups at the minute. They keep coming thick and fast. We've got Isak's first start. We've got Szoboszlai midfield. We've got two new starting fullbacks from the game the other day. Where do you think he's at, the manager, with these selections in terms of what we now know over the last couple of games and also going into the weekend?
So I think let's sort of start with, firstly, let's start with Isak. Sean dropped in the WhatsApp group beforehand that he sort of wasn't surprised or wouldn't have been surprised because off the basis when the rumour was going round that he gets a full proper warm-up that they can observe and they can work on. It's not the idea he's warming up himself, just jogging down a touchline or anything like that. And so what it means is that all the way through he's got staff around him, he's got other players around him, and they can see where he's up to and that he's doing everything right. And that's not to say that he wouldn't, but it just is a more intensive warm-up pre-match. So I think that was, you know, I think that was a good observation, and it may well be part of why the manager's chosen to use him from the start. I will be intrigued to see how he's used on Saturday, if at all. It may surprise people and it may be down to how the game goes, but it would not surprise me if we actually don't see him at all on Saturday and then see him start again against Southampton, and maybe they look to get another 10 or 15 minutes into him as and when that one comes around. So that's that. Then the next thing is, I'm struck on the fullbacks. You know, let's be clear, the plan for Robertson will not have been that he gets as much of the game against Burnley as he ends up getting. That won't have been what they wanted for it pre-match. That was a circumstance-driven one by the manager with Kerkez. But he still backs him again and backs him to go again in this from the outset. And, you know, Robertson's last off, 86. It goes that long before Robertson gets withdrawn. He is the last sub there for Kerkez. So it's de facto pretty much a 90 that he drops in. So they obviously, you know, back Robertson, back his fitness enough to do what they've done there. Again, I would be surprised if Robertson now starts against Everton, but, you know, we'll see, and I've been surprised before. And I think with Frimpong, and it's interesting really with Isak, and then he decides to throw in Gakpo, which I think is worthy of a bit of conversation. But Isak and Frimpong, he's treated them effectively exactly the same way. It's worth saying that Frimpong obviously gets his hour against Bournemouth, and we haven't seen him since. So yes, he's had a pre-season with Liverpool, but it is now approximately a month since he's last been able to play meaningful football. And again, I think we've discussed this before, the number of times you can break the game is therefore, it's an impact on a manager's decision. So I wonder if in an ideal world, they might have wanted to have 5 to 10 minutes less Isak. And in an ideal world, they may have wanted to get 5 minutes more into Frimpong. But the smart thing becomes, well, we'll just do them both at the same time. And then he throws a Gakpo in there as well. And then I think in the heart of the midfield, for me, this is, you know, it's a tactical question as much as it's anything else. Although, you know, with McAllister's fitness being the way it is, there might be some protection in of him. I think it's interesting to me that he's gone with Szoboszlai and Gravenberch. And in terms of the way Liverpool attack, it's interesting how much I think it influences how the game goes from a Liverpool point of view. The two of them in there and the strengths, are mostly strengths, occasionally small weaknesses of the two of them, and how that drives the team forward, Sean.
Yes, totally. I think the Atletico Madrid setup is really interesting, just before touching on maybe the tactical aspects of and some of the chat about Liverpool's defensive numbers. So I thought what was really interesting with Atletico Madrid, there were two aspects to this. One was that you pointed out to me, Neil, during the game, quite rightly, the way that obviously from kickoff they were set up like you would normally see a 4-4-2, but they were pretty quickly dropping into a 5-4-1
yep.
at times, almost flicking sometimes between almost like a back three, allowing Llorente to bomb on. Then at other times, they were letting both fullbacks move on. Then they were moving into what looked like a back four. And then you've also got the situation where Simeone, not the manager, who gets sent off all the time, Simeone, the number 20, is dropping back into right wing back. And then when that is happening, they've got Raspadori moving out of, let's say, a right-sided centre-forward role into that right midfield role. What was really interesting is the way that Atletico Madrid decided to pepper Liverpool's left side. We've become accustomed over so many years with teams wanting to target our right back area and pretty much to stay away from Virgil. There was a massive onus here on trying to get lots of rotation, and particularly 2v1s, 3v2s in against Robertson. Now, that was interesting to me because it would give Gakpo a lot of defending to do. And obviously with Szoboszlai being in that left side midfield role, especially in Champions League game, that's going to be a bit more of a defensive role. It's really interesting to see how they get on. Now, look, you've got to analyse performance all round. Then obviously, then you've got scoreline, and then you've got result. And the reason I reference that is, if before Burnley we had said to each other, I'm going to guarantee you now that Liverpool are going to win, we'd all have been happy. And if you'd have said Liverpool are basically going to be penned in their half and Burnley aren't going to get a kick, you're under no risk of, pretty much no risk of conceding a goal. Again, we'd have all gone, that's amazing. If you'd have said it's almost last kick of the game that you win 1-0, we'd have all gone, oh God, again. So I think when you look at this performance before going on to the defensive numbers, if we'd have all been told you're going to win the game, we would go, great, fantastic, bite your hand off. If we then get told Stats Bomb are going to calculate the percentage chance of Liverpool winning based on XG at 85% and that Atletico Madrid would have a 3% chance of victory, I think pre-game we'd have all gone, yep, bite your hand off for that. And the Stats Bomb XG numbers, like we've talked about a lot, the cumulative numbers are quite different to the overnight numbers. They come out at Liverpool cumulative 2.37, Atletico 0.41.
Yep.
So we're within a whisker of being a plus two XG cumulative goal difference. Can you imagine if you did that through the Premier League and Champions League? That would be insane. Like, statistically, you would have an incredible chance of winning both, and winning both by some distance, I would argue. So on those performance metrics, you would be like, that's amazing. And then if I say a 0.41 XG, if your opponent has two shots and it's a 0.20 chance and a 0.21 chance, you might say, we might just cop for one if we're unlucky. If we're really unlucky, we might cop for two. But generally speaking, we're pretty happy with that. So I think when you 2-0 up and you get pegged back to 2-2, I think some people think it's like a crime against football. Like, you've just automatically, you've got to be in some way negligent. There's got to be some level of maybe of complacency, or that you've tossed it away, or there's something wrong. Now, I apologise if you don't like me saying this. Obviously, at a completely different level. I've blown a 3-0 lead. It was early season, system change, few new signings. Maybe there's some coincidences in that. But with some of the chatter after the game, I watched it back and I focused on every single Atletico Madrid attack. Now, I haven't got long enough to bore you all with going through them all one by one. I've already done that to Neil and Dan away from this show. So I think the most value I can pass on from doing that is there is not a transition issue here. This is not Liverpool attacking with ridiculous levels of abandon and being reckless in their shape and being caught on the counter. It wasn't that against Arsenal. It wasn't that against Burnley. It wasn't that against Newcastle. I just think that feeling from pre-season and a bit of the situation against Bournemouth is maybe sticking in pundits' minds. I watched Match of the Day last night and I just felt it's quite a bit cliche-driven. You know, it was almost like AI had created what they wanted to say. It doesn't fit with what I've watched back and what I've gone through. What I would say is that from a tactical point of view, there's lots of times when the press works really well. Very quick example, 11th minute, Isaac presses right-sided centre-back, Salah jumps the left-sided centre-back, Frimpong jumps from right-back, Liverpool recover the ball, centre midfield's really tight, couple of occasions Virgil follows Griezmann in deep and actually wins the ball, and Liverpool are a bit unlucky with what happens from there. A lot of that's working really well. The key things from Atletico's attacks, if there is a pattern, I would say one is that when Liverpool are in the mid-block, the structure looks good, but as Madrid are playing passes into midfield, particularly wide areas, Liverpool aren't showing any intensity to like get on the first touch, get on the second touch, really get out there and get. It's a bit like a training session at two-thirds pace where the opposition are kind of moving the ball side to side and your structure looks great, but you're not really putting the player on the ball under any pressure. And that means that people can start getting a bit of confidence. They can start making movements off the ball. The other thing that comes through the first half in particular, but the game, is that Gakpo has his hands full a bit because they are trying to overload 3v2. As I say, they've got Llorente going in there. They've got the right midfielder over there. And what you would have thought was a centre-forward is also going into those areas. So there's rotation, there's movement, and potentially a 3v2. And to be frank, look, Gakpo just doesn't defend very well down there. He's caught sleeping.
Also, Sean, if you say to me, look, Griezmann has been a phenomenal player. But if you say to me about this Atletico team, you know, who's the player do you think has been or is, you know, a massive threat? Who's top quality? My answer is the right back. You know, like the right back is for me a genuinely and has been a genuinely excellent footballer for many a season. It's been, you know, since they came to Anfield all the way back in 2020, I was like, he's a footballer, he's a proper player. He is there, you know, as I say, Griezmann now, he's 35. You can make a strong argument that day in, day out, of the outfield players, their best footballer is the lad who plays right back.
Yeah, and he becomes John Barnes when he plays at Anfield, which isn't very helpful either. and seems to have all the luck that anyone could possibly have. But I think on it. I mean, I like Pablo Barrios, by the way.
Yeah, he's a footballer, isn't he?
Not sure about how suits the Premier, but he is a footballer. Yeah. But back to Gakpo, I just think sleeping on it a bit, maybe not certain of his role at other times. Doesn't defend well. I don't think if I was Andy Robertson, I'd have really enjoyed Cody Gakpo's position in front of him. Didn't give Robertson much support. And most of the attacks, to be frank, are down to Gakpo positional errors, which mean the Liverpool back four have to drop, which then allows Atletico to move forward and Liverpool end up defending pretty well. The goal itself is interesting, the way that the goal happens. I disagree with one of Slot's interviews after the match where he seemed to suggest that he felt that the goal was in some way coming. I thought 30 minutes to 42 minutes was Liverpool's best football of the game. Real high intensity. Thought Atletico were just getting into the washing machine a little bit. Thought it was more likely to go 3-0 than 2-1. It's just a bit unfortunate that, you know, Gakpo's out of position. Liverpool have to respond, drop the line. Robertson Konate defend really well. So Szoboszlai then fills in for Gakpo, who looks a bit tired at that point. That might be something worth focusing on, because with Luis Diaz moving on and with us only having a 16 and then 17-year-old player there, Gakpo's probably played more minutes than he would have done if we'd have still had Luis Diaz at the football club, or if Rio was 21 and not 16, just turning 17. And Szoboszlai fills in that role. And Llorente is quite lucky that he's offside. He's miles offside. So Liverpool squeeze the line. Virgil's out of position. Konate's a little bit out of position zonally. Minor things, but they're not in the right position. And Szoboszlai has a runner and just points in the direction of where he thinks Virgil should be. Watch the goal back, you'll see for yourself. As a defensive midfielder, you cannot just pass men on by pointing at your centre-backs. The golden rule is you track your runner, and if you get told by the centre-back, I've got him, then okay, fine. But unless you hear the shout, you track the runners, and Szoboszlai didn't. And because Llorente's come back from an offside position, that creates a 4v3. Point I'm making is, to sum up, this is not some mad structural coaching fault of Slot. There's nothing there that would scream at me that Liverpool are going to be defensively weak or anything. I think there's maybe just some key roles in the team. So Szoboszlai is still learning that position. There's a couple of times in the first half where I would say for a defensive midfielder, he's not quite picking up spots between Virgil and Robertson like say McAllister probably would. But Szoboszlai's overall performance, work rate, his pressing, everything about him was absolutely phenomenal. That's not to decry his performance. It's just he's going to need more game time there for those things to become a bit more automatic. I suspect Virgil might need to talk him through it a bit more. I just wouldn't read too much into it. I've got a feeling that a few of these players will just bed down in the position. You can probably work with Gakpo to get some improvements there. And I just wouldn't worry about it too much.
Just a little bit more into the numbers there, Dan, for, you know, that Sean's sort of driving at in terms of the way the fortune's gone. It was interesting. Ted Knutson put the cumulative race chart on social before, and you know he's being sarcastic about it, but saying it's a beat down from Liverpool, really it just finishes 3-2 because football's a bit of a funny game. Llorente's first goal, the XG and it's 0.06, the second goal's 0.04, but because the deflections on both of them when you look at the post-shot XG, we try not to focus on that too much from time to time, but I think it's instructive here. The first one goes from when he strikes it to a 0.63 post-shot XG chance, and the second one goes from a 0.69 post-shot XG chance as he hits the ball. Last season, you know, the whole of the campaign, Liverpool faced 23 shots that were of 0.63 XG or better. So a really good way to compare this, of post-shot XG, so a really good way to compare this is the Callum Hudson-Odoi finish that we all agree that beat us against Nottingham Forest, which was a phenomenal effort that Kelleher could do very little about, although in the back of your mind you do wonder about Alisson, but I want to be clear, that was 0.67 post-shot XG. So both of these efforts have ended up being through, you know, I mean, he's had the shot, don't get me wrong, but both of these efforts have ended up being in the class of that Hudson-Odoi effort, because both take nicks on the way through. There's also an argument that both of them are offside, frankly, in there as well. And you end up with the match going the way in which it goes. They hit the back of the net. Liverpool last season faced 23 shots of 0.63 XG or more. And of them, 21 of them went in. 21 of the 23 went in, because the thing about post-shot XG is what you're saying is that when it's left his foot, or more accurately, when it approaches the net, the keeper has an X amount chance. If it's more than 0.6 XG, then it's less than 1 in 2 that the keeper is going to save it. That's, you know, how it is irresistible these shots become. They should be hitting the back of the net. That's the point. And that's what they turn into, both of these efforts. And, you know, the more you sort of come away from the game, Dan, the more you think about the game, the more you actually can be impressed with Liverpool's performance over the 90 minutes, the more you can be impressed, not so much with the determination that they show late on, but the quality that they just consistently show through the match. They do have to suffer in a couple of periods, as Sean says before. They're not great from sort of 15 to 30, and I don't think they're that good sort of 70 to 80. And it's interesting that Sean mentions Gakpo, mentions tiredness, mentions a bit on positioning, because when I said before about the changes, it's the two lads who are coming back from injury. But the third one he does, which might be a bit of a surprise, is Gakpo. So that he does that too aren't a surprise. The third, I think, is a little bit of a surprise, and it is interesting to me that it's Gakpo who comes off on the hour mark.
It's the first time we get to see Alexander Isak, Neil. Expected goal and expect assist combination of 0.6, which is pretty high. I think his link-up play with Florian Wirtz was noticeable. When you look at the sort of on-ball value, pass combinations across the game, it's Salah, Ekitike, Isak, Wirtz, Van Dijk, Salah, Wirtz, Isak, you know, Wirtz, Ekitike. So Wirtz and Isak going either way are very, very present there in terms of Liverpool's threat, in terms of pass combinations throughout the game. What did you make about of the sort of attack and fluency that Liverpool showed with Isak in the side?
I mean, there's, for me, the numbers, and obviously it is just literally one game, that's all anyone's played so far in the Champions League, but is adjusted to 90 minutes, pressure regains of 14.5. That puts him 100th percentile, top five leagues in Europe. His pressures, a point moved to 90 minutes, adjusted for 90 minutes, is 39.2. You know, is... his successful dribbles are 2.9 for the position of centre-forward. That's 99th percentile. And you've just mentioned there about the expected shots and expected goals cumulative. You know, these are all nice numbers from Liverpool's point of view that they'll be pleased about. And what you could see with the eye, which I thought was the most instructive, was, Dan, he improved every 10 minutes, I thought. You saw him find his place a little bit more, find his movement a little bit more, both in and out of possession, and then 10 minutes later it was better again. You saw him find his touch a little bit, and then 10 minutes later it was better again. And that just sort of kept happening. And the understanding point, firstly, there was some good interchanging with Gakpo on the left-hand side, but I thought that the understanding that he had with Wirtz, and also I thought the understanding that Wirtz had with him, with Salah, and with Gakpo over the course of the evening was exceptional. It all felt as though it made just a teeny little bit more sense for Wirtz over the course of the game. I don't want to sort of say that is solely Isak. I think before this match, a number of people who were doing stuff with the Anfield Wrap were saying, you know, I think we'll see Wirtz go up another level. It's Champions League game. He might just have a little bit more. It might just suit him a little bit more in terms of time to operate. So I don't want to sort of say that correlation is causation 100% on Isak. But it did look already as though these are two footballers who will play well together. So that's a good thing from a Liverpool point of view. I think the other really encouraging thing from the Liverpool point of view is you saw no sense in the slightest that Ekitike was sulking in any way, shape or form. From the minute he came on, he was sharp, he was direct, he was fully engaged. And just on that, you know, I mentioned it last night on the post-match audio, but I think it is worth mentioning. I just think that, you know, the crowd did an excellent job with Ekitike. It was a genuine big ovation. It was singing his name when he was warming up, singing his name when he was playing. And that stuff I think can matter. You know, if you are Ekitike there, you're going onto a pitch knowing that you're loved. And it would be easy to maybe think, oh, has he come in now and here's me not playing the first Champions League game? And that was not how he approached it at all. And it's possible, I doubt it is, because he looks like he's a lad with a really good ethic all the way through so far, Ekitike. But that sort of stuff from the crowd can only help. So I think across the board, and this is back to feeling good about the performance in the cold light of day, you know, feeling good about where Liverpool have ended up, because, you know, this is not the same as the Bournemouth game, where you can maybe wonder if Liverpool have shot themselves in the foot or did perhaps genuinely knock off a little. You know, it's not the same as the Newcastle game where, as Sean said, you can feel as though throwing 2-0 leads away, it's criminal. And Newcastle's arguably the one that's closest to criminal in amongst all of this, because they were down to 10 men and it was just a bit of a bombardment and there was nothing else that they really had at that point. And that's the one where maybe if you really wanted to, you know, to pull at Liverpool, that'd possibly be the one I'd pull out. But even that's got the context of the fact that it's an away game, they're a hugely physical team, or can be a hugely physical team. But, you know, let's go with that one. This one, last night, if Liverpool have won the previous four or five games of this season in a pretty run-of-the-mill fashion, then everyone's glowing about this one. The game it actually most reminded me of, to go right the way back, was the first game of the 18-19 run, where it's Paris Saint-Germain and Liverpool racing that one into a 2-0 lead, put them absolutely in the washing machine for the first half an hour. But they just couldn't quite sustain that physically, and when you've got as many good players as Paris Saint-Germain had, you know, they found their way through with quality. And then second half, Liverpool are in that one. You know, Liverpool are the better side. It's clear they're the better side, but Paris Saint-Germain are always going to carry a punch, and in the end, Liverpool get punched on the nose. But then Firmino comes off the bench and it goes 3-2 in injury time. That team that season, you know, it hadn't had a run of tight games up to that point, unless there's one I've forgotten off the top of my head. So everyone took that as, well done, Roberto Firmino. He does the celebration with the eye. Everyone bounces out. It's obviously, if you do something for the fifth consecutive game, or people can argue you do something for the fifth consecutive game, or for the third time in the season, you go from 2-0 to 2-2. Then, yeah, you know, people are going to sort of look to draw those parallels. I just think it's a false parallel. I really do. And I think, you know, part of the point of this show is to look at that stuff and push back. I think it's just ultimately a bit of a false parallel. This is a really good Liverpool performance. The numbers underpin that. But what you just got to see with the evidence of your own eyes in front of your eyes last night, whilst being exasperated and frustrated by virtue of the way the game had gone, in the cold light of day, you get to say, no, we got to see a good Liverpool last night, and a Liverpool that, if they play like that in a number of the upcoming games, I'd be really surprised if they haven't won the vast majority of them, and won the vast majority of them comfortably.
If I may, Neil and Dan, I mean, look, Leon Osman and Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank watch a lot more of Liverpool than us three. And they do a hell of a lot more analysis than us three, so I have to defer to their better judgment. But if we look at StatsBomb's Champions League data on teams defending this season, Liverpool are 100th percentile for the following: XG conceded, XG shot conceded, counter-attacking shots conceded, set-piece XG conceded, aggression and defensive distance, if you're in that way inclined. The only thing you would say is clear shots conceded is 68th percentile. So that is not indicative to me of a defensive performance that was a shambles.
Yeah, and you can keep pulling these numbers. It's only one game, but we've got one game, so let's just sort of use the one game that we've got. You know, if you want to run through, and it's not even the full round of fixtures yet. You know, let's be clear, teams are playing tonight, but if you want to run this stuff through, look at XG difference inclusive. Liverpool 1.96 over the course of the game, Real Madrid 2.7, Paris Saint-Germain 3.01, but Liverpool the third best, better than Bayern Munich, and then it's Olympiacos and Arsenal who are bouncing around the one mark. And I'd argue Liverpool had a tougher opponent than perhaps any of these. I think, Yeah, and I think what Atalanta are is always a complicated one. It's always a little bit up in the air. But, you know, essentially you can end up, if you're not careful as you go through this. Olympiacos is XG difference inclusive because they were playing Paphos. Liverpool have faced a much vaunted, and with an acknowledgement, I mean, I did a chat with Miguel Pereira before the game, and his thing was he thinks Liverpool are playing Atletico Madrid at the right time. There'll be a better side by December. The manager's got a target that he really does want to give everything he can to try and win the Champions League. They know La Liga will be really difficult for them. They know they're a little bit transitional. But it is amazing at times to watch Atletico Madrid and see how quickly any and all of these footballers become Simeone footballers. It must be a really specific scouting requirement. But this is the point. The point is that's what you were meant to be getting. That's what we were meant to be coming up against, and we were meant to be worried about that. And I think we all had a level of confidence that we'd get a result. But what underpins the performance, as I say, that you could see with your eyes if you were prepared to be clear-eyed about it, certainly see when you watch parts back and see in the numbers, is that, you know, Liverpool are the better side by a distance. That they managed to sort of combine it with a bit of devil's club sorcery is no bad thing. But had, in the cold light of day, that finished 2-2, the sort of sorcery we would have been talking about would have been about the two deflections from an Atletico Madrid basis. And that would have been a much stronger case for that over the course of the game.
To just go back to the general context, Sean, this is, to use a Kloppism, this is a moment rather than an identity, rather than a permanent fixture. It is a moment that a football team is in. And just because they're winning, people, you know, are looking at this as some kind of issue of what's underlying. It's not the case. This is just the same as having a run of games where, you know, you concede early goals, for example, or it's similar to a team that can't win away for, you know, 2 years. So it's one of those things that I hope this doesn't happen for 2 years for all of our sakes, put it that way. But, you know, at the same time, these are moments in football, and that a team is doing this as a way of winning a game of football as opposed to losing one, or as opposed to being something negative, I think it is skewing people's narratives a little bit around what this actually is. Football, when you go away from stats and tactics and everything that we do here, football can just deliver you some oddities now and again. And Liverpool are in a run, or in a moment of what this is for them, which is 5 wins on the spin coming late. And it is unusual, and I get that, and I get it's noteworthy in that sense, and we're talking about. But if anything, it is a positive to their characteristics, right? And their personality as a side.
Oh, totally, 1,000,000%. I mean, it's an enormous credit to the performance staff at Liverpool in relation to the fitness and conditioning of the Liverpool players. I think these games between the first two international breaks are a bit of a nightmare, not just in terms of fitness, but you look around, the amount of people picking up niggles and knocks, which is then setting them back just as they're sort of trying to get into peak state. You've then got breaking of rhythm and momentum within all of that, which is not too helpful. You've then got loads of teams with pretty crazy schedules. I think Manchester City play tonight and then go to Arsenal Sunday.
Yeah.
We play Wednesday and then have a Saturday lunchtime kickoff. Like, the schedule's not doing much to help people in that regard with rotation and freshness. But then you've got teams, because of how good Liverpool are individually and collectively and with such a top manager, physically and mentally, and more so mentally, it is draining teams that are playing against Liverpool.
Mm.
And something that's noticeable, how many of the teams we faced on 80 minutes have come for us?
Yeah.
Have gone, we want the win.
Mm.
Absolutely none of them.
Yeah.
Whether they've just got a goal back. Now, Newcastle, look, they've got 10 men, they're knackered, get it. And it's what? Silly o'clock, basically, on the clock when they get their goals. They equalise late, that makes sense. But Arsenal are not going on 75. We're all in here. This could be a free hit. Like, we can win the league and lose at Anfield, but it's here. They don't do that. Bournemouth drop all the way back and, like, grateful that we've got in this. Let's just hang on, get a draw. Atletico Madrid the same. So the problem is, because Liverpool are so good, a draw against Liverpool home and away is extremely valuable to most of these sides. So A, you've got them, it's almost like United in the 90s, Liverpool in the 80s. Teams are dropping back when they're mentally frayed and physically frayed. If you're making subs to try and shut the game down, they've got to try and get into the rhythm of everything really, really quickly, which isn't easily done. And you've then got this incredible mentality from Liverpool, which, you know, if you could bottle it, you'd be a billionaire, wouldn't you? You know, and then when you mix that with quality, with a team defending deep, where you can basically pepper the attacking third around the 18-yard box. And when you've got players now with huge amounts of experience of coming up against that, if you think about it in those terms, it makes total sense that you are going to score quite a lot of goals late on. If your definition of late on, by the way, is minute 80 to minute 100.
Hmm.
I mean, that is 20% of the game of football.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, you are generally getting a few minutes added on at first half and then, you know, at what 3 to 8 minutes, possibly second half. So even if you go 80 to 95, it's still, it sounds ridiculous, but it's almost like it's a huge percentage of the second half in its own right, isn't it? Where the opposition have almost gone, we'll have what we hold. And Liverpool have got the carrot dangling of scoreboard pressure, but high quality with mentally tired and physically tired players. So yeah, you don't want that to carry on, but you know, if you were opposition teams, the problem is the next time, and hopefully it's a long way off, it happens, but the next time Liverpool are looking for a late goal, to what extent are they almost crying it in?
Yeah.
Let alone any expectation level. Oh, so I don't know what you think, Neil.
Well, I think that that's absolutely spot on. I think that is there, and it is worth saying, if you do sort of say from 80, as you say, Sean, 80 minutes of a football match now is 4/5 of the way through the game. There's a fifth of football left. So I think that is important. But look, you know, let people sort of talk about that while we can talk about other things that the side showed itself to be capable of, and especially in this game. You know, this to me is, it feels a little bit like the start of the campaign. Last season, in the cold light of day, it's worth saying, in the corresponding fixture, Liverpool have just been beaten by Nottingham Forest, and they go 1-0 down to AC Milan, and they find themselves that day and go and score three goals. And they come through the other side of that one, and it feels good. It feels like, you know, you can see what this side is. Now, I'm allowing in there, they'd already gone to Old Trafford, and they've been really thrilling and exciting in that one at Old Trafford as well. But in hindsight, that one at Old Trafford, you know, very much feels as though it was one that Liverpool really ought to have been winning. And then from there, they're able to get a little bit of momentum up. The challenge for this side, what's very interesting is on the pass networks, Gakpo, Isak and Salah are all on the line, and Wirtz is just behind it. And then actually, if you have a look at the second half, Wirtz is more advanced to Gakpo, Ekitike after he comes on, and Salah. Wirtz is actually higher in the second half. That might be to do with his move to the left, I'm not quite sure. But, you know, it looks, again, almost like, and I mean this in a good way, if you wrote it down as a kid where you would have the footballers be, that's how Liverpool look in the first half. That's what it is, and that's what it's meant to look like. And that's also what we got to see. We got to see what it was meant to look like. Liverpool played the best football of the season, 32 to 42, 43, I think. And they don't get anything for it, but they genuinely are doing a number on Atletico Madrid. I think you can also make a further point, which is, I'd say this is the best Liverpool have played in a game that Alexis McAllister hasn't started since Newcastle at home, which is going all the way back to the 1st of January as 2023 turns to 2024. You know, that's a good old time. And this is the best that these players have played in that period. So, you know, I think you've got to be pleased with that. And as I say, seeing the three forwards, players three forwards, I think, with the attacker midfielder behind, that is the plan. Now, you can not like the plan, or you can say, I prefer it if it's more robust in the middle of the park. You can prefer a three at the back if you want. You can prefer whatever you want. But I'm of the view that yesterday we got to see what it is that the manager is going for. I think on the Gakpo points and tiredness and all of that, I think if there is something that the manager might just be a teeny little bit concerned by, it may well be where Gakpo's level is in terms of consistency at the moment, both in and out of possession. And what that does, because I think if Gakpo could really find the level that he played at times last season just before the injury, then I think that you're in a situation where whoever Liverpool have in the front three, if you throw Wirtz in there, it's exceptionally difficult to handle them. And then if you've got a Robertson playing well, a Frimpong playing well, and those two midfielders doing what they were doing, that it's just difficult to get any space, any peace. And then when you don't have the ball, you're getting pulled all over the place. And I think that, again, it's striking that he picks Frimpong in this. I think that the manager's very good at anticipating what the opposition are going to do. I think he's good at analysing what the opposition are going to do, but I think he's very good at anticipating how a game's going to go. And I think he anticipated that Atletico Madrid were going to look to play that sort of 4-4-2-0. So he wanted to allow Frimpong and have him in there jumping. And again, we've talked about that. You've got to see him do that first half as well. The manager will be delighted when he sees that. And Liverpool nearly get a chance from it one of the times that he does it. They get bogged down in it a couple of times on other occasions, but one time they nearly get a chance because Frimpong goes all the way to press the fullback, and suddenly Liverpool have got men over in that space and Atletico Madrid don't quite know what to do about it. And they've got a winger stood up the line who's neither use nor ornament at that point. So I think all of this adds to, you know, what should be a sort of a general feel good about Liverpool. As I say, we all understand the wider context, but the other thing to point out, and this is as good a place as any to point it out, although I will be pointing it out over and over, is that Liverpool don't win 5 consecutive league games last season at any point. And they go into the Merseyside derby on Saturday, where winning that would be having won 5 consecutive league games. So, you know, even this side, which has been excellent under this manager, even this side's got things that it can do, that it can go to, and that's the opportunity that Saturday holds. But it's also how hard it is to win 5 consecutive league games and how hard it's been to win 5 on the bounce in this league. I think only Wolves and Newcastle managed to do it last season, which also suggests how it can be a little bit of a lottery, given the fact that, you know, the league has Liverpool, Arsenal and Manchester City in. Those are the two sides that do manage to do it, and that's the next task for this side, really. If it can continue to sort of harness this momentum that it currently has, then we could all be looking around when we do get to the end of this next run. And I agree with Sean, it's a horrible one, and maybe looking at a side that looks in rude health given the journey it's been on.
If I may, just very quickly, on the Gakpo front, you were saying about consistency, Neil, I just want to say I thought you're absolutely spot on. I mean, even if you just look at it from a data point of view, in a sense, like, he's averaging a pressure every 4 minutes, roughly.
Yeah.
So you think, when you look at his role's quite a lot, sort of blocking passing lanes, tracking runners, things like that. So I think it's really important, I think, to watch the game back and watch Liverpool's defensive work to analyse what he does, because it's not as easy as going, well, okay, Liverpool's 9 and 10 quite often do a lot of pressing. How successfully are they pressing, both on the eyes and the data? I think Gakpo's a bit tricky on the data. Like Rio, I think, is getting a pressure every 2.5 minutes, something like that, rather than every 4. But he's coming on when Liverpool are chasing the game, full of running. I mean, I'm sure he is, but that might not be with the manager's instructions. Do you know what I mean? That might be youthful exuberance. But I think the issue when I watched it back is that I'd be like, I don't expect you to be massive on the pressures and a key part of Liverpool's pressing, but I would like to think you're doing a lot of work to help Liverpool's midfield and left back. And at least in this game, that wasn't there. So, yeah, I'm sure that consistency will come. It's just so difficult when you haven't got another senior player to go, well, look, we can ease Cody back into that and wait for the consistency. And I think it's really interesting soon who Cody Gakpo's main rival is for that role the other side of the international break, whether it will continue to be Rio or whether it will be Hugo Ekitike.
Let's see. We'll leave it there, because we are back in a couple of days and God knows we don't get rotated. So thank you to Neil and to Sean, and we'll see you after the derby.